this race might end up being the latest in a long tradition of very close Alaska elections.
The gap between gubernatorial candidates Mike Dunleavy and Mark Begich has disappeared, according to one new poll. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 31st. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, two wealthy men have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in an effort to elect Dunleavy.
It always makes me question, well, who is that candidate going to be answering to at the end of the day?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Bristol Bay Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss proposals to change federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting November 6th, starting at 8:30 a.m. at the Dillingham Middle School Gym. More at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
The signs for Republican gubernatorial candidate Mike Dunleavy. Maybe you've seen them with bears and killer whales. They're all over Alaska. You might also have heard some of the radio ads, like the one where a Democratic state senator praises Dunleavy's ideas about the Alaska Permanent Fund dividend. Here's the catch. Those advertisements don't come from Dunleavy's campaign. Instead, they're from an independent group that's been funded largely by two wealthy men. Dunleavy's brother, Francis Dunleavy, and Alaska developer and recreational fishing advocate Bob Penny. And as Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, that has some people worried about how much clout the two men would have if Mike Dunleavy is elected.
Tyson Fick is a commercial fisherman, which means he spends a lot of time thinking about politics. That trade war the president is pushing? Not so great if you're trying to sell salmon to China, for example. Lately, Fick, who's from Juneau, has been worried about Alaska politics, too.
Oh, there's so many things to be anxious about, you know, this election, the state election, and exactly what it will mean and for the future of Alaska and, you know, the country for that matter.
Fick's business depends on Alaska government for a lot. Fishery science and management, transportation and infrastructure. One thing making Fick especially nervous right now is that the frontrunner in the campaign for governor, Republican Mike Dunleavy, has pledged to slash state budgets. Then there's the fact that one of Alaska's highest-profile recreational fishing advocates, developer Bob Penny, has given hundreds of thousands of dollars to a group supporting Dunleavy. Penny has clashed with commercial fishermen near the Kenai River for decades. A group he funded once called Commercial Set Nets, quote, indiscriminate killing machines, and unsuccessfully tried to ban them in certain areas. Fick says he's worried about how much weight Dunleavy, if he's elected, would give to Penny's ideas, and to his suggestions of people to appoint to the boards and commissions that divide up the catch between commercial and recreational fishermen.
The problem that I have is when there's any amount of wildly out of scale donation to a particular candidate, it always makes me question, well, who is that candidate going to be answering to at the end of the day?
Penny has given $325,000. Francis Dunleavy, one of Mike's three brothers, has given $400,000. Together, the two men have spent roughly the same amount of money to get Mike Dunleavy elected as the Democratic candidate, Mark Begich, has raised for his entire campaign. Bob Penny wouldn't agree to be interviewed, but I talked to one of his longtime friends, Mark Hamilton. And according to Hamilton, Penny really doesn't have strong opinions about commercial fishing statewide. Instead, he says, Penny's views on fishing are really local. He wants to preserve salmon for recreational fishermen on the Kenai River, a popular destination for tourists and people from the Anchorage area.
The genesis of his actions are access for the common man to bring his children down to the Kenai River. He has no anti-commercial fishing views about Bristol Bay or the pollock fishermen or the crab fishermen or anything like it. It's very specific.
Penny got even more specific in a prepared statement he sent me. He says he's 86 years old and that Cook Inlet King Salmon is now the number one issue in his life. He says the fish are a national treasure, but the state mismanages them. The political group that Penny is supporting calls itself Dunleavy for Alaska. It's what's known as an independent expenditure group, the state-level version of the super PACs authorized by the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision in 2010. Dunleavy for Alaska has spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on television and radio commercials and mailers. It's bought ads on political blogs and produced a series of custom campaign signs. Dunleavy's rivals say the group was crucial to his victory in the Republican primary nomination. Here's Mead Treadwell, who lost to Dunleavy in that race, talking on primary night to a panel run by a political blog, The Alaska Landmine.
I'll just say that the biggest challenge that I had, in all honesty, is that my opponent had two donors who wrote big six-figure checks. I had a lot of small donors on my side and a lot of small donors on the IE side, and that's hard. It's pretty hard to run against Francis Dunleavy's checkbook, period.
Francis Dunleavy wouldn't agree to be interviewed. He lives in Houston and hasn't spoken to Alaska reporters since getting involved in state politics. But he did respond to a series of emailed questions. And he says he anticipates having no role in state government if his brother is elected governor. The no was in all caps. He also says he's not well informed enough about Alaska policy issues to make recommendations to Mike Dunleavy. For his part, Mike Dunleavy also wouldn't agree to an interview, but he says in an email that he doesn't consult with any of his three brothers about state business, and he says that if he's elected, he'll treat Bob Penny's policy views like any other constituents. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Dunleavy's lead in the race for governor has become razor thin. That's according to the latest tracking poll by Alaska Survey Research. Dunleavy led Mark Begich 42.5% to 42.3% in the poll, which was taken from Friday through Monday. Pollster Ivan Moore says the number of people who view Begich positively has grown steadily since September, while the number of those who view Dunleavy negatively has also grown.
This race might end up being the latest in a long tradition of very close Alaska elections.
Independent Governor Bill Walker drew nearly 8%, though most of his supporters know he ended his campaign. Moore says some of those Walker backers may shift to other candidates, particularly Begich.
I think they're in mourning, frankly, and finding it a little bit hard to let go. I don't think it's a permanent state of affairs.
The poll included Libertarian Billy Toyin for the first time. He drew 3%. It was the last Alaska Survey Research poll before the election on Tuesday. Moore didn't disclose who paid for the polls. He says it's a consortium that includes people who supported different candidates. The state Senate race in Fairbanks between Republican Senator Pete Kelly and Democratic Representative Scott Kawasaki has seen the most spending of any legislative race by a wide margin. That's according to reports on campaign spending filed yesterday. Here to talk about these reports is Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchman. Andrew, how's it going?
It's going well, Casey. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. So which races are drawing the most campaign spending?
A lot of the money is coming from independent expenditure groups that are targeting specific areas of the state. And that's particularly true for Republican-affiliated groups, which are seeking to defeat members of the current House Majority Coalition. And the targeted incumbents at this point include nonpartisan candidates Jason Gren and Paul Seaton, who's a former Republican nominated by the Democrats in Homer, and Republican Gabrielle Ledoux, and Democrats Adam Wall and Matt Klayman.
Okay, why are these candidates targets for Republicans?
They all represent districts where registered Republicans outnumber Democrats. That's typical for the state. Only 8 of the 40 House districts have more registered Democrats than Republicans. Those are in downtown Anchorage, Juneau, and northern and western Alaska. But these particular districts have a particularly large margins, and the Republicans really see these as potential pickup areas. It won't be easy. Some of these districts were targeted by Republicans 2 years ago, and they were unsuccessful.
What about groups on the other side?
Well, there are groups funded by labor unions that are aiming to defeat Pete Kelly and Republican Representative Jennifer Johnston. Other House seats held by Republicans that face tough challenges include Lance Pruitt in Anchorage, who is facing Democrat Liz Snyder, and Josh Rivak, who defeated Republican Minority Leader Sharice Millett in the primary, and he faces Democrat Pat Higgins in the general election.
Definitely an interesting primary in that race. Now, which House races have seen the most spending?
First and foremost, we look at a seat in Fairbanks, where Democrat Catherine Dodge and Republican Barton Labone are competing to succeed Kawasaki. The Democrats don't want to lose that district, and it is definitely one of those seats where there are significantly more Republicans than registered Democrats. So that is really got a lot of attention. It overlaps with the Kelly Kawasaki race, which represents that House district as well. The second most spending is in Juneau, where Democrat Andy Story and Republican Jerry Nankervis are running to succeed Democrat Justin Parrish.
Now, this has maybe gotten overshadowed a little by the gubernatorial election, but which party is best positioned to organize a House majority after the election?
That very much remains to be seen. The current Republican minority in the House would have to pick up three seats to take the majority, and that may prove to be a tall order, but it's possible. I can say that there will be at least 10 new members, since of the 40 House races, only 30 have incumbents that are still in the general election.
Andrew, any other particularly interesting House races?
Well, the best funded write-in candidate is Republican Jake Sloan, who's aiming to defeat Ledoux. Ledoux caucused with mostly Democratic House majority the past 2 years, and she survived a Republican primary challenge.
The results of that primary really close, and I guess there were still some questions about some ballots in that election. Is there anything more to say about the state Senate?
Well, outside of the Kelly Kawasaki race, it could be a quiet election for the Senate. The next most competitive Senate race may be in Juneau, Gustavus, Haynes, and Skagway, where Democrat Jesse Keel faces nonpartisan Don Etheridge, and that's to succeed Democrat Dennis Egan. But other than Kawasaki, no challengers have raised even half as much as the candidates from the parties that currently hold the Senate seats.
Interesting. Well, Andrew, as always, thank you and appreciate you being here.
Thanks a lot, Casey.
That was Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Gustavus residents have a contaminant scare in their water.
You don't think that the water that you've been drinking and assume is safe is poisoned. Like, that's not a thought that crossed my mind ever.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, investing in Alaska by hosting local interns and donating to University of Alaska programs like the UAA Summer Engineering Academy. More at bp.com/Alaska.
A quick note, a man wanted by police and charged in a shooting Sunday in Utqiagvik has been taken into custody. North Slope Police last night announced Asiagan Dana Amawik has been found. Officials say Amawik fatally shot one person and injured two others. He's charged with second-degree murder and two counts of assault. A woman who left her vehicle after a two-car crash on the Glen Highway was struck and killed by a third vehicle. The woman's name was not immediately released. Anchorage police say the first crash occurred at around 4 p.m. Tuesday near the South Birchwood exit of the highway. Both vehicles after the collision stopped in the center median. Both drivers stepped out and walked toward the edge of the highway. Police say a third driver lost control, entered the median, and struck one of the drivers in the first crash. Witnesses performed CPR, but medics declared her dead at the scene. Police closed the highway to investigate and diverted traffic around the crash scene. Open enrollment for the individual health insurance market starts tomorrow. For the second year in a row, Alaska residents will see cheaper monthly rates, but insurance rates remain high compared to most other states in the country. Alaska Public Media's Abby Collins reports.
In 2018, the state saw an average rate decrease of 22.4% on the individual market. Rates are going down again this year, though by a much smaller amount, 6.5%.
This year we're looking at a Primera Gold plan for somebody who's 45. Last year it would have been $858 a month. This year it's down to $740.
That's Lori Wing-Heyer, director of the state's Division of Insurance. That's the agency that regulates the individual insurance market. One of the reasons rates are lower, the state established a reinsurance program that separates the highest cost patients from the rest of the market. Wing Hire says the decrease in rates is not guaranteed to continue.
Depending on the claims experience, it most certainly could go back up again. But Alaska is fortunate that we have the reinsurance program, which does provide us some stability.
Wing Hire says in the last 2 years, the state has also seen health care costs decrease through some medical providers based on agreements with insurers. There is only one insurance carrier in Alaska for individual market customers seeking insurance through the Affordable Care Act, Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Jim Havens with Primera says the reinsurance program is a major reason rates went down. But there are other factors.
If people move in and move out of the state at an abnormal level, that changes rates. And then just claims cost. And then ultimately, if the providers decide to charge less for their goods or services, or if we're able to convince people to go to states where the cost of care is less, like Washington State, then we encourage that and make it easy for them to go to a state like Washington to seek their care.
Despite lower monthly rates, Primera hasn't seen an increase in enrollment. Wing Hire says last year, the market actually lost customers. She says uncertainty in the insurance world likely contributed to that.
I think a lot of people were just concerned that the ACA would still be there, that the subsidies would still be there, and how much the plans would be. This year, it hasn't been quite as tumultuous in the ACA market. So we're hoping that people come back and give it a look and see what the premiums really are.
And Havens with Primera says rate decreases mean more to customers who aren't eligible for insurance subsidies. The vast majority of Alaskans who buy insurance on the individual market do receive subsidies. Open enrollment lasts through December 15th. Anyone who wants coverage through the individual market has to take action within this window. And those residents who already have coverage through the end of the year and don't choose a new plan will be automatically signed up for the most similar plan available in 2019. The state encourages residents to look at how plans may be different in the new year based on changes within the network. One of those changes affects the cost of care outside of Alaska and Washington. In Anchorage, I'm Abby Collins.
There's a kind of foam used to suppress oil fires, but that foam can leach into the environment and contaminate groundwater. In Alaska, it's been detected close to some airports and military bases in Fairbanks. It's also cropping up in other places around the state. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of households stocking up on bottled water.
Kelly McLaughlin's family has owned property in Gustavus since the 1960s, what was once part of an old territorial homestead. Most of that is close to the airport. And this past summer, she learned the state was testing water wells nearby for contaminants, specifically a compound known as PFAS. Many of the residents of Gustavus are on their own water system, including McLaughlin. So she asked the state to test her water, too. She says it took some convincing, but in September, she got the results back. And she was floored. Her well tested positive for the contaminant. It had twice as much as the federal government advises for human health.
You don't think that the water that you've been drinking and assume is safe is poisoned. Like, that's not a thought that crossed my mind ever. I wasn't prepared for the results to be that bad.
The state is providing McLaughlin's home with shipped-in jugs of water. 11 other wells also qualified, and this isn't an isolated event. A spokesperson for the Alaska Department of Transportation said this is a growing national issue. That's what tipped off the state to test the wells near the Gustavus Airport. Over the summer, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released a report suggesting the chemical compound known as PFAS may be more hazardous to health than previously thought. McLaughlin says she stayed awake at night, thinking about the impact this could have on her family.
My daughter, of course, drinks the bath water, and there's no keeping kids from engaging with the contaminated water.
Exposure to the chemical compound has been linked to an increased risk of cancer. It can affect growth and learning development in children and interfere with hormone levels. McLaughlin says she'd like the state to provide some kind of blood test to the residents. But so far, they haven't made the offer.
No, and I've asked and asked and asked, and I've given every reason that I can think of. I mean, I wanted my breast milk tested. I would like my blood tested and my kids' blood tested.
The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services didn't respond in time for this story about whether they'd be offering any additional test. In the meantime, McLaughlin is considering paying for her own to at least get a baseline for her medical records. She's still hoping the state will be responsive.
This was nobody's fault. Like, nobody knew, as far as I know, nobody knew how bad these chemicals were. Nobody knew how far they would travel. The DOT definitely did not intentionally poison the people in Gustavus, but it happened.
Now, she says the ball is in the state's court to make this right. A spokesperson for the Department of Transportation says they're working with an engineer to start to develop some long-term solutions. And the state is taking public comment until November 5th to develop some enforceable levels for the chemical compound beyond the federal guidelines. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Do you need health insurance but think you can't afford it? Well, did you know that Alaska's individual market health insurance premiums are going down again for 2019? If you need insurance or currently have insurance through the individual market, be sure to shop at healthcare.gov between November 1st and December 15th to confirm that you have the plan that best meets your family's budget and coverage needs. You may also call 1-844-PLANS-AK for local help. This message sponsored by the Alaska Division of Insurance.
The Marijuana Control Board is considering legal on-site consumption of marijuana at cannabis retail shops. And members of the public interested in submitting comments on the proposal must comment by 5 p.m. tomorrow. That's Thursday, November 1st. Fairbanks cannabis entrepreneur Brandon Emmett is vice chairman of the board that regulates marijuana.
All of those public comments that are accepted by the deadline will become part of the board packet. The board can take those into consideration.
The board will consider the proposal and public input at its December 19th meeting in Anchorage. Emmett occupies the board seat that represents the cannabis industry, which he says strongly supports the proposal.
The idea of on-site consumption is overwhelmingly popular.
If the Marijuana Control Board adopts the proposed amendments to state regulations, the board would begin including a so-called marijuana endorsement on retail licenses it issues to qualifying cannabis shops. Board members may amend the proposed regulation changes or decide to take no action. Airplanes connect rural Alaska to the world. All those planes need mechanics to maintain and fix them. The Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta has a severe shortage of aircraft mechanics, and it's expected that a shortage will soon be felt across the world's airline industry. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports a new Bethel training program wants to fill the gap with local workers.
Inside a bright white hangar at the airport sits a fleet of small multicolored airplanes.
We have Cessnas, we have Pipers, we have a Bonanza, a Navajo Chieftain, we have a Cherokee 140.
These are some of the most common planes flown in the region. Yutlet Narvet is the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta's adult workforce development program, and it's opening an aircraft mechanic school in Bethel. Executive Director Mike Kaufman takes pride that many of the program's planes and the resources to get them here were donated.
I went up to McGrath and took the wings off that blue one that's in the back there with my brother Jeff and threw it on a barge that my other brother was a captain of, and he brought it down for free. It was just people understanding this school and what it's going to bring to the region.
What it will bring is local people earning local training to fill critical local jobs. And this is in the region with the state's lowest per capita income and the highest unemployment rate.
Virtually every airline that I know of here is looking for mechanics.
Keith Henthorn is the business manager for the regional airline Ute Commuter Service. None of the airline's mechanics are Bethel residents. Local hire would serve the community and boost the airline's bottom line. Bringing in outside workers is expensive. It costs flights, housing, and because of the shortage, overtime. The population of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta is growing, and Ute Commuter Service wants to grow with it. To do that, they'll need more mechanics. So will the rest of the region's airlines. Yutlet Narvet School's aircraft mechanic program can nearly guarantee jobs for graduates. That's what program director Jeremy Osborne found when he surveyed the regional airlines.
They said, if we could turn out magically maybe 300 airplane mechanics, they would probably be able to employ them all over the YK Delta. I mean, Raven and Grant are not just in the YK Delta. They have Nome and Uniclete, all the villages up there.
It could be said that when it comes to job opportunity and security in this field, well, the sky's the limit.
You could go down to Anchorage. You could go down to Texas. You could go anywhere, and this credential follows you.
The first cohort of mechanics begins February 2019 and runs a year and a half. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Rocky Mountain School in Good News Bay hasn't had a UPIC teacher in over a year. Last week, the students started reciting the Pledge of Allegiance in UPIC to incorporate the language into the school day. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more.
At 8:35 each morning, a community member leads all 64 students in kindergarten through 12th grade in the UPIC Pledge. It's an effort to integrate the language into the school day in the absence of a teacher. That's according to Principal Sally Benedict.
The school board asked me where we're at on our UPIC teacher, and at this present time, there's nobody who has filled that position yet, so we wanted to make sure that we still had UPIC going on in the school. So we all went into the UPIC room, and we looked on our wall, and we saw the Pledge of Allegiance, and we thought that would be a great place to start.
Unlike many dual-language schools in the Lower Kuskokwim School District that teach in both UPIC and English, Rocky Mountain is English first. And finding a UPIC language teacher has been challenging.
You have to be able to speak, read, and write UPIC, and you have to be able to pass proficiency exams on the speaking, reading, and writing, as well as being able to pass what's called a praxis exam.
Non-regular certified instructors must be hired as associate teachers and enroll in an education program. Since 2013, LKSD has required teachers who don't hold a degree to earn one by taking 9 credits a year. The goal is to have more state-qualified UPIC teachers. The biggest hurdle to finding a teacher, according to Benedict, is that the position at Rocky Mountain School is part-time.
It's 2 hours, 4 days a week. It's not a full-time job. Super hard to get somebody.
To fill the curricular void, the school is looking for a traditional cultural specialist for next semester. Applicants still need to pass a proficiency exam in UPIC, but they don't have to take college classes. The teaching position will remain open in hopes of attracting an instructor willing to become a certified teacher. For now, the students at Rocky Mountain School will learn the UPIC Pledge of Allegiance line by line. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
And that's all for this spooky edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media, and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Andrew the Killer Kitchenman and Eliza Death Jenkins in Juneau, Nat the Hurt Hers and Stabby Abby Collins in Anchorage, Tim the Tombstone Ellis in Fairbanks, Anna Rose from the Dead MacArthur in Bethel, and Izzy the Ice Pick Ross in Dillingham. Special thanks to our editor Annie the Axe Fight, our news director Gory Laurie Townsend, and Zachariah Hughes, who is an actual real-life werewolf. Our audio engineer is Ammon Chop Chop Swenson. Deathly Wesley Early is our producer. And I'm Casey, the Gravedigger Grove. Happy Halloween.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Public media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.